We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
It's time for another episode of The Breakdown. I'm Matt Hamilton. That's Matt Castle. I pointed the right way this time off the jump. Proud of myself. Chiefs got another big win on Thursday night over the Chargers in the division. We'll break all that down, what we saw from the Chiefs, what they need to build on, and we'll preview the upcoming matchup against the Colts coming off that tough loss to the Jaguars and a struggling start to the season. So, Matt, welcome. What stood out to you most from that Chiefs win on Thursday night?
I mean, there's so much that stands out to me. It's such a hard-fought win, and that's what you need. And it's a division rivalry, and everybody keeps waiting for that moment that the Los Angeles Chargers go out there and they take control of the division. But the Chiefs, look, they're still top dog, and they found a way to win. It was a gritty win. You knew that it was going to be one of those last-minute fourth-quarter wins that you have to just grind it out, and they made the plays that they needed to make at the end of the game. Obviously, the interception with Jalen Watson at the end was the momentum shift that they needed to take the lead and hold on to that lead. You know, defensively, I thought they played well. They played really well against the run. And that's something that I think I've seen most improvement from of this team defensively was their run defense. Last year, they were on average giving up around 115. This year, it's been 89 in the first two games. And so, to me, if they can continue to build on that, continue to have good run defense, play physical in the front seven, and then secondary make plays like they did, that's what's going to take this team to the next level. And again, Mahomes, the special qualities that he has each and every week, he's a superstar in this league, and he makes superstar plays.
Yeah, and we've talked about the depth of that receiving core, you know, even before the season started, how that we thought that would be a strength. Yes, you lose Tyreek, but there's so much depth there. And it really showed up once again. Nine different guys caught passes for the second week in a row. And the offense, it wasn't as smooth a sailing as it was against the Cardinals. Do you put that more on the Chargers just having a really good defense, or do you think there are some things that the Chiefs still need to work out, especially in regards to that passing game without Tyreek?
Well, it's game two, right? And so there's going to be adjustments that are made throughout the course of the season. You're going to find your strengths and weaknesses. Week one will tell you a little bit, but week two, three, four, five, as you get into the middle of the season, you start to really understand each of your individual players' strengths and how to play to those strengths. But at the same time, you got to look at the Chargers. They spent this offseason, they went out and were able to bring guys in like Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson. This is a much stronger unit than what it's been in the past. And so when you go up against a dominant defense with two elite pass rushers and really good secondary, it's one of those things that they're going to challenge you no matter who you have out there on the field. And I think a little bit is to the Chargers. And at the same time, I think that they're still trying to figure it completely out with the absence of Tyreek Hill and that threat in the new personnel that they have offensively.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you said, when the game was on the line, they found the ways to make plays. And I agree, I expect this thing to pick up steam as the season goes. And again, we're saying all of this, and this team is sitting at 2-0.
At 2-0, right? There's not a lot of complaints here.
And with a primetime win against a divisional rival that a lot of people picked to win the Super Bowl this year. So, it was an impressive performance overall, and especially – with some of the injuries they had in that secondary. And as you mentioned, seeing a guy like Jalen Watson step up, the seventh round pick out of Washington State, coming up right, just such a clutch play in such a critical moment. I know we like to focus on the Chiefs side of things here, of course, but just looking at that last play at that pick six, what jumped out at you when you went back and dug into that play?
Right. Well, you see the Chargers, what they're doing is no huddle, and they were trying not to substitute because they wanted to keep whatever personnel the Kansas City Chiefs had on defense on the field. Because once they substitute, then the Kansas City Chiefs, they stop the clock and they stop everybody and they're allowed to substitute. So I don't think that they wanted to substitute at that point. Instead, what they try to do is get on the ball. And operationally, Herbert's trying to communicate, right? He's trying to communicate protection, trying to communicate the routes on the outside. But Everett, as you saw, the tight end, he's exhausted. He can't even hardly get to the line of scrimmage. He's trying to call for help, get out of the lineup. But Herbert's like, come on, get up here, run that flat route, open it up. There's running sticks concept. But at that point, you know, Everett kind of fools him. He stops. He's lazy. He slows down. And at that point, you know, you see what happened was Jalen Watson's in perfect location. It's not like he did anything exceptional, but because Everett fooled Herbert threw the ball, he's in great position, he catches it, takes it 99 yards, and that really changed the outcome of the game.
And is that one of those things that as a quarterback, you know, we saw Everett kind of asking to come out, he's winded, Herbert is obviously trying to get the offense up to the line and run that no huddle offense, but is that one of those things as a quarterback, as you mature, as you become a veteran and get that experience, like maybe you notice, hey, my guy's winded, like let me throw this out of bounds or let me go to the other side? Or is that asking a little too much of your quarterback?
You know, it happens constantly where you get fooled by somebody, and it could be on a spot route or return route. You think he's going to sit down, then he takes off and you throw the ball with anticipation. And I think that's what happened. And it's a really hard lesson to learn. At the end of the day, though, the coaching staff and everybody's going to go in, they're going to watch the film. And the one thing that they always say to you as a quarterback is, look, don't make a bad play worse, particularly in that situation when you're in the low red zone, it's first down. If things aren't completely clean, you don't absolutely love it. Throw the ball away, live to fight another down, and you're still in great position in second down inside the 5-yard line to hopefully go put a score on the board.
Definitely. And yeah, obviously we saw it go the other way for the pick six. The Chiefs had another field goal later on to extend the lead to 10. Put the game away, but it wasn't exactly what we expected, because I think we expected a few more fireworks than we got from the offenses, but the Chiefs did enough to get that win. And let's dig into some of the tape now, some of the big plays from that game. This first one I want to take a look at down in the red zone earlier on in the game. Matt, what did you see here?
Yeah, you know, they love that set where they start Kelce isolated on the other side, right, with three wide receivers. And then Juju Smith comes over to a 2x2, basically a stack formation over there at the top of our screen. And when you see that, there's a coverage adjustment on the back end, because originally it starts in some kind of two high. And I think it's going to be some form of a bracket coverage with a man concept underneath. But as soon as they go from that 3x0 set to the 2x2, there's some kind of communication that happens on the back end. You see JC Jackson comes up and points Travis Kelce. So now he's got him one-on-one. The other safety is going to take Juju Smith-Schuster, who's off the ball, and play him one-on-one. And then it looks like it's a one funnel. And when I say one funnel, it's a post-high defense who's cheating to the other two wide receivers over here. But then when you see this, you look at Mahomes, and as he drops back, he's looking at the primary part of his read is now to the left of where he's looking, right? He's looking over there. He's seeing Juju Smith-Schuster break in here. But what happens is that funnel player, which he's just reading eyes, he squeezes that window, right? And Mahomes doesn't like it. And as soon as he doesn't like it, he gets off it and says, okay, I've got to go make a play. So then he scrambles out. He breaks contain, scrambles out, and he does what Patrick Mahomes does best, is he improvises. He makes a guy miss. You see a few different pump fakes. There's nobody open at the back end of the in line. But then McKinnon here just pops open late, sidearm throw, touchdown. And again, you know, this is an elite quarterback with unique characteristics and the ability to make plays, particularly inside the pocket, but outside the pocket. When it breaks down, nobody does it better than him of improvising and making a play.
Yeah, and all those pump fakes too. You know, those defenders get a little jumpier down in the red zone. So you start pump faking at guys, you have those, you're able to manipulate those defenders that way. And then obviously the way he can throw from all these different arm angles and drop down and just find that passing lane and get it into McKinnon. It's beautiful. And that's what makes this offense so difficult to defend, is not only do they have some elite players, not only is their play design absolutely unbelievable, but even when you outsmart them or account for what they're trying to do to you and take away the primary read, you just have Mahomes out there and his ability to extend plays and just make something out of nothing.
Right, because he's so good on that level, but he's also a threat to run. So as a defender, you're put in such a compromising position because you're sitting there going, wait, do I stay back here and I try to cover down on this guy because I know it's a scramble situation. But the minute that they stay with that guy, then he's going to run up the sideline for a score. So he puts you in a very difficult position, and then he's able to make throws like this that there's – only a handful of guys that can do anything similar to this at all.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Look at this throw. Look at the arm angle. Just exactly how you rep it, right? Exactly how you teach it when you're going through mechanics and you're going through warmups. You're like, let's work on that half sidearm throw right there. A few different pump fakes, off balance, and throw a perfectly located ball on his chest so he can fall into the end zone. Yep, that's exactly what we're going to do.
It's unbelievable. But I want to move on now to the biggest touchdown pass of this game. And this is, I absolutely love this because it's something we talked about last week leading up to this game, is how do you deal with having to face not one, but two elite edge rushers and two guys that are absolute game wreckers in Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa, because you can't double them both. Obviously you don't want to take too many guys out of the pattern. And limit what Mahomes can do. So how do you do it? And we got an answer here on this play, as you see Bosa and Khalil Mack in those wide nine techniques. What did you notice about this one?
You know what I love about this play is because this defensive structure, and it's particularly the front, is unique. You don't see this very often. You see there's four down linemen, but there's three. It's an overload front. You've got three defensive linemen down here at the bottom of the screen, and then you've got two linebackers mugged up in your B and C gap. Immediately, look, this puts a lot of stress in terms of the communication and how to handle this, because you don't know which one of those guys are a threat to rush, because both of those guys have the ability to blitz at that time. But I thought they did a remarkable job here, and also accounting, like you said, for these guys, Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa. These guys are elite pass rushers. So what do? They bring Kelsey in, and they also have Juju Smith there that gives body presence. So when Kelsey comes in, look at his release pattern. A lot of times you're going to take the path of least resistance, right, which is go outside Bosa. But no, I love the play design because he inside releases. What does that do? It just gives a little bit of hesitation to Bosa. Is he going to crack me? Is he going to hit me? So he's not screaming off the ball. And the same thing with Juju Smith-Schuster. He sits there, gives body presence, kind of acts like he's going to get his hands on him just to give Khalil Mack something else to think about, so he can't just pin his ears back and run around the edge like he would if he didn't have that guy there. So that really set up the protection scheme. And then the offensive line did a tremendous job. And I'll say this, Wiley right here at the right tackle position, he steps down, gets hands on that blitzing linebacker, which gives Jerick McKinnon the ability to step up and stone him. But then he kicks out and does a great job here of getting back outside and pushing Bosa up past Mahomes so he can step up in the pocket.
And again, that little bit of a wider path that Bosa has to take because Kelsey releases inside of him is what allows Wiley to get those hands on and still get to Bosa in time. And you see McKinnon step up, make an incredible block in there too. But yeah, when you get those guys 10, when you get Mack and Bosa 10 yards up the field, they're at 10 yards of depth before they can turn that corner. It just creates such a great lane for Mahomes to be able to step up in the pocket and deliver this ball.
Yeah, and you've got to also give tremendous credit here to Justin Watson and his route, because he's going up against J.C. Jackson, who is a very good corner in this league. But what he does a tremendous job of right here is, watch this. We always talk about, for wide receivers, when you're running a deep route, step on the guy's toes, make him uncomfortable. So he explodes out of there with speeds. And if you make your break too early, you give that guy the ability to recover. But right here, when he steps on his toes and makes that first initial move to the out route, he gets J.C. Jackson uncomfortable and flips his hips. And right there, that's what makes the route. As he makes him flip his hips, now he's off balance, and then he takes it up the field to stay skinny right there. And again, this is an elite throw by an outstanding quarterback in our league, one of the best, who just flicks his wrist and rips it 45 yards downfield on a dime. But again, it also is you got to give credit where credit's due. And Justin Watson right here, the way in which he ran that route to create separation and get open is really what made that play.
Yeah, and this is I just love this play because it really is. It's all 11 guys doing their jobs and executing. And it took everybody being perfect basically to pull this off, because the Chargers defense, you know, it's not like the Chargers defense really screwed this up. It's just, you know, the Chiefs out executed them, and that design of that protection scheme is just absolutely phenomenal and so creative, because you're able to basically help on Bosa and Mac without losing anybody from your pattern, and you're able to help your tackles block them one-on-one, because Orlando Brown and Andrew Wiley, ultimately, when all is said and done in this play, are blocking them one-on-one because Kelce and Juju both release. But the paths that they take force them to take those wide angles and basically run them completely out of the play. So it's phenomenal play design, incredible protection. As you said, like, just the execution from those tackles and from Jerick McKinnon, and then another otherworldly throw from Mahomes. And it took all of that to beat this Chargers defense on Thursday night. I do think they're legitimately that good. I know we're not used to seeing the Chiefs have these types of struggles offensively that they went through at points in this game, but I do think this Chargers defense has something special going, and it was a phenomenal effort from KC to be able to make enough plays to pull out this win.
100%, and you hit it on the head. When you see a play like this, this is all 11 guys working in unison to actually make this play go. And it starts with the protection up front. If you don't have this protection, if you don't step down, McKinnon doesn't do a good job on that linebacker, makes it more uncomfortable, makes it sticky in the pocket, then he can't deliver this ball. But it's also his vision when he steps up in the pocket. Look, if there's one guy that you're going to throw to on this play who's open, it's Watson, right? And that's him. Yeah. And for him to be able to see that as he's stepping up, feeling that pressure, and still it's a little bit muddy. You're feeling those guys kind of come down and start to get on you. You can feel their breath, but he delivers a perfect ball. And again, his feet aren't even set. He's off balance stepping up, and he's able to make that throw. And that's a unique throw. Very special.
And we love talking about the passing game here on the show. You're a quarterback. I coach quarterbacks. We're obsessed with it. We want to talk about it all day. But we got to give a little love to the run game, too.
Yeah.
The Chiefs closed this one out. And it's not just Edwards-Helaire on this play or the offensive line, but I love the pass catchers getting involved in springing this play. What did you see here?
Yeah, it's just an outside zone. And really, they're running outside zone, and you got to get a hat on the hat. I thought the offensive line did a great job of cutting off the backside, getting to the second level. But then again, it's Travis Kelce going up against Derwin James, one of the best safeties in the league. And he steps up, gives a little bit of presence to help with the angle for Wiley to get out here on that defensive end. And then he gets locked in, hands inside, starts making the drive. And then Juju Smith-Schuster coming in. Originally, I think he thought he had Derwin James, because you could kind of see him run in there and go, oh, wait, Kelce, you're taking him? Okay, I'm going to turn out. I'm going to get this nickel. They do a great job of keeping their hands inside, of getting on their man and busting this run wide open. But it was a great job collectively up front of the double teams, moving up to the second level, cutting off the backside. And then, again, it takes everybody in the run game, Hamilton. You know that. You're a coach, man. It takes everybody to do their job. And when those pass catchers have buy-in and will go out and hit somebody and do their job in the run game as well, and blocking, that was what makes a real football player, and that's what makes that run game go.
Yeah, and that's what I tell my kids all the time. You know, you'll get good plays in the run game when the offensive line does its job. You get those home runs and those huge plays when the perimeter guys block. And as you said, the buy-in, I don't want to hear about Juju's fantasy numbers right now. This is a game sealing play. That's a game sealing block to be able to spring Edwards-Helaire and ultimately get the Chiefs that field goal that puts them up by two scores late in the game. This is as clutch as making a big catch on third down, you know, making a block like that. And allowing Edwards-Helaire to get out into space like that. And I think we're going to continue to see a big year from this run game because, you know, we saw the offensive line really grow and develop last year and take the strides they need to make. And I think now you're seeing this is the underrated stuff that adding a guy like a Juju Smith-Schuster brings to your offense, because this is what he did in Pittsburgh too. It's funny because everybody sees all the TikTok dances and all the other nonsense that's gone on with him sometimes that people get frustrated with, but he's a gritty player. Like he gets his hands dirty. He's the guy that makes the tough catches over the middle, and he's the guy that's willing to block play after play.
Yeah, and I mean that's what makes the difference. He's a true football player, like you said. Playing in the slot is not an easy thing in this league, because you're always going to be one of those guys that's susceptible to contact, right? You got to make those tough catches. You're going to get hit, but it's also one of the most important parts to any run game is that slot player being able to go and pick up that nickel or hit the safety and stick their nose in there. Even though, look, this is not the highlight that a lot of people are showing on ESPN or on NFL Network and all that stuff on your show, Hamilton. But at the end of the day, these are the plays that they don't get enough credit for, but these are what make the big plays go, are those guys blocking downfield and getting a hat on a hat.
Yeah, and I felt like I was about 70 years old saying the TikTok dance, those kids and their TikTok dances. But yeah, no, you're right. Like this is the stuff that he doesn't get enough credit for, and that he brings to this offense now. That they did need. So just a tremendous effort all around to find a way to get the job done. It wasn't the prettiest game offensively that we've seen from the Chiefs. Certainly wasn't as pretty as Week One. But again, you get a win against a top quality opponent in a primetime game. Can't complain about that.
No, you can't complain about that.
Another important one coming up this weekend, taking on a Colts team that's really been struggling so far. Obviously, injuries have been a huge issue, missing Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce last week, as well as on the other side of the ball, Shaquille Leonard, all-pro linebacker Shaquille Leonard. It does sound like there's a chance those guys are going to be back. We're hearing they're showing up back at practice. So Matt, when you look at this matchup with Indianapolis, what's the first thing your eyes go to?
You know, Indianapolis has got to be a hungry team right now because they've been struggling. They want to get back on track, and they've got a good collection of players on both sides of the ball, but they haven't been able to put it all together. And when you look at the defensive structure, it's one of these games for the Kansas City Chiefs offense. It's going to be a take what they give you game. It's a ton of zone coverage, three deep, four underneath. They're going to give you a lot of easy throws on the outside, hitches, quick outs, and then everything in this passing game, for the most part, is going to be about your spacing, right? You got to create space because all those guys are zone spot droppers, so to speak. So you got to get the ball out quick. You're going to be able to influence them with the run game because these guys are a fast flow team, right? They're predicated on speed at the second level, even in their defensive front. They're going to shoot the gaps. They're going to try to penetrate. They're going to get in the backfield. So you have to do a good job of being diligent this week, taking what they give you and not allowing – you know, the fact that you haven't had a chunk play, because Gus Bradley in this defensive structure is meant to try to make you earn it and then capitalize on turnover opportunities. So take care of the ball, take what they give you, and move the ball down the field.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but the NFL action is in full swing here at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And that's right, we're talking touchdowns, we're talking big plays, and even bigger payout wins. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. Listen, if that's not enough, DraftKings got you covered. Everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Right now, for every leg that you add, you can boost your winnings up to 100%. That's right. I paused a little bit because I had to make sure that was true. Right now, for every leg that you add, you can boost your winnings up to 100%. With bigger payouts than ever, why would you bet on football anywhere else? To make things even sweeter, you can throw down on stepped up same game parlays once per game day, all season long. That's right. All season long. Here's what you got to do. You got to go to DraftKings Sportsbook and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code KCSN to get $200 in free bets if your team wins when you place a $5 bet on any football game. That's code KCSN only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. You can see the show notes for more details. Now, let's get back to the show.
And it is, it's a departure from what we've seen in the past from this Colts defense a little bit, because obviously Matt Eberflus moves to Chicago, takes over the head coaching gig with the Bears. Right. I thought Eberflus's best trait as a defensive coordinator is he would always find a way to take away what you do best and, you know, make you beat him with your second pitch. You know, he's not going to let you beat him with the fastball. He's going to make you use your second pitch to beat him. And he's given, you know, the Chiefs usually have come out on top in those matchups, but he's slowed up that Chiefs offense a little bit and given them some problems over the years. So I'm interested to see how things are going to be different under Gus Bradley.
Yeah, it will be interesting because, again, this isn't one of those defenses schematically that you're going to be sitting there watching film going, gosh, I got to be really on, you know, the pre-snap read, post-snap, because it's not a disguise-oriented defense, right? It's what you see is what you're going to get. And so then you just have to make sure that you're really good with your keys, your understanding for where you want to go with the ball, and then be just diligent with that ball. Because, again, this defense over these last few years has been very good at getting takeaways and being opportunistic. They've got Stephon Gilmore over there and also Kenny Moore. Both of these corners are veteran guys and they're playmakers. So you don't want to force balls into coverage and do that. You just have to sometimes take the check down. But again, the quick game is going to be a big part of this. And then for them defensively, it's going to start with stopping the run game with Jonathan Taylor, because they're going to want to run the ball. That's what this offense is predicated on, is running the ball. And then they'll give you a lot of different formational looks. They'll use a lot of different personnel. They'll spread you out. They'll go empty. They'll take their shots. So, but the one thing that I'll say is this offensive line isn't what it used to be for the Indianapolis Colts. And they've struggled. They struggled mightily last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Matt Ryan was under duress all game long and would force some unforced errors as well in the pass game. So they're going to have to get after this group up front and then at the same time stop the run.
And speaking of Matt Ryan, it's been a brutal start. One touchdown pass to four interceptions. Obviously, you know, a tie against the Texans, a loss to the Jaguars, two games that, you know, everybody expected to be cakewalks for them, you know, leading up to the season. They were the trendy pick to win the AFC South. A lot of people thought they were going to take a huge step forward with that addition. What are you seeing out of him? Is he just looking like he's on the downturn of his career, or is it just adjusting to new offense, new personnel? Is it the injuries? Is it what do you think is going wrong with that Colts offense right now?
I think some of it, I mean, it's definitely a combination. There's no doubt. It looks like he's not as comfortable as what you would expect just at the start of this season with this offensive unit. Again, the personnel issues have really hurt them. Their top two wide receivers have been out, so they've been struggling to figure out who's going to be on the field, who's running what. I mean, so, and then at the same time, it's been a lot of it had to do with protection, right? They haven't been able to protect him and put him in a comfortable pocket, because he is one of these guys. He's a special player, and he's been that way for a long, long period of time, but he's a pure pocket passer. He's not going to get outside the pocket. You're not going to run a ton of boots or sprint game or anything like that. So he's stationary. You know where he's going to be. So you have to give him that pocket of protection from the interior part of the line and the outside. But the outside tackles have really been given fits over these first few weeks, and they've been getting beat, and that's never a good feeling. So they've got to figure out a way to protect him, play action probably a little bit more, less drop back, and get into more manageable third down situations. And all those things come into play when you're talking about good quarterback play versus somebody that looks out of sorts, so to speak, with Matt Ryan right now in this offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to give a little credit to that Jaguars new look front with all those athletes. Looked incredible last weekend too.
They did. They did.
Don't
they
want to put it all on the Colts messing up. That front is going to be really, really special. Whether it's, you know, later this year and by next year, they have waves of young pass rushers. So credit to them as well. But yeah, going back to that defensive side of the ball, you mentioned Gilmore and Kenny Moore. Obviously, Kenny Moore, maybe one of the most underrated players in the league. He's as good a nickel corner as there is. We've seen him just absolutely wreck games because of his ability just to impact both the pass and the run, stick his nose in, make those hard-nosed tackles. They'll use him as a blitzer. He's an absolute ball hawk. He's a special get. So obviously we'll see probably some of him on Juju. Do you think we'll see him matched up on Kelce at all? How do you see them utilizing him to try to slow down what the Chiefs do?
Right. That's one of the questions that they're going to have to answer is who covers Kelce and who are they comfortable with covering Kelce, because they don't play a ton of man. So a lot of it is going to be, like I said, zone oriented. They're going to be in spot. So Kenny Moore, based on what defense is called, will either be in the slot nickel, probably playing some form of zone. But when they do go man, is the third down situation. It's more situational than anything else, is when they change it up. And it's that third and five range. They'll mix it a little bit in the red zone just as a change up, but you're not going to see a lot of it. So if you do go man to man, it'll be interesting to see who they want over Kelce, who's probably the biggest pass-catching threat for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'd have to imagine that a guy like Kenny Moore will be on him during the game if they go man-to-man.
And also Stephon Gilmore, obviously a former defensive player of the year when he was in New England, huge moments in that Super Bowl win over the Rams. He's kind of fallen off the map, at least as far as the public perception is concerned. You know, obviously got traded to the Panthers last year, spent his time there on a team that fell out of relevancy quickly. Signs with the Colts as later into free agency. Is he still that guy? Is he still a top level corner? Or is this a guy that, you know, you don't have to worry about as much at this stage in his career?
Well, if you turn on the film last week, I mean, there's a lot of catches made and thrown his direction, and it's that stop start. It's the quickness. It's everything else. I think he still possesses that. He's a ball hawking guy, but he's also really good when it's press man. And this isn't really a press man situation. He can't use his length and all that. He's playing primarily off coverage and then trying to read route patterns, which he's really good at. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know if his skill set is meant to just play zone, right? I think more man, the more press that you can put him up into somebody, use his long arms and run with somebody, get physical at the line of scrimmage, he'll benefit more from that than he will in the zone. Now, but you always have to take him into account. You don't want to be careless with the ball and just feel like you can go after him, because that's when somebody jumps a route. Even like the Revises of the world, when they get a little bit later in their career and people have done this, you always still have to be careful around guys like that. They've got so much experience and institutional knowledge of what goes on in the league and route concepts, how to read certain stuff, that if you get lazy and you just think that you're going to go after and attack him, sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite you.
Absolutely. And it sounds like, just from talking this out with you, Gus Bradley has obviously been a great defensive coordinator in this league and had success multiple places, but it doesn't sound like he might be the best fit for the Colts personnel in some ways. Do you think that's fair?
You know, it's interesting, because I think that his structure and his scheme and what he brings there, there's not a lot of change from what they were prior to that, right? And so I think that they're looking for a smooth transition. How do you utilize your personnel with the four down front and the linebackers and stay in that 4-3 structure? And by doing so, I thought that they think it would be a seamless transition. But thus far, it just hasn't worked out. And a lot of it has to do with they haven't been complementing each other in terms of both phases of the game. You know, the offense has struggled. They've got behind early last in the first week of the season against Houston, fighting from behind. And so it doesn't put your defense in a great position to be successful. One, because they're on the field for a really long time when the offense is struggling and not being able to sustain drive. So it works hand in hand. And I think that they'll get it figured out. They've got a lot of good personnel on that side of the ball, and they've had success in this system before. It's just they're going through their growing pains, and it's going to be a process.
And that's a great point. I feel like people kind of overlook that at times, because they look at one unit as a singular entity, like the offense by itself and the defense by itself. But you're right. When your offense is struggling, it puts so much more stress on your defense, because you're on the field more. The field, you know, the opponent's usually in better field position. It really does impact things so much. So you're right. You can never really just take anything, any side of the ball just at face value. Both sides really do have to work in concert to be successful. But I want to ask you before we go, we've been doing this. We've been pretty dead on so far with our picks on these games. So what are you expecting this weekend? How do you see this one shaking out?
I think the Chiefs are going to have a really good day at the office. I think that they're going to win probably 31-17. I'll give them 17. I don't know if they're even going to score that many points, but right now, I just think that the the Chiefs, their ability and the way that the offense is set up with the quick throws, the RPOs and all those things, they're going to be able to take advantage of this defensive structure and then start running the ball a little bit. And then until the Colts show me that they're going to become an explosive offense in the way that they've struggled the first 2 weeks, I believe that the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs has a lot of confidence right now and they're playing better and that they're going to give them fits.
I agree with you. I was going to go before, you know, I wrote mine down before 31-13 was going to be mine. I'm giving them a little less credit offensively than you are. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor can, you know, can if he gets going and the Chiefs have some trouble up front dealing with that run game, it can change this game in a hurry. You know, if the Colts are able to get him going and hang on to the ball and milk the clock and keep the ball away from Mahomes, I think that's the one chance that the Colts have to hang around in this game. But based on what we've seen so far on tape, it's just it's hard for me to believe that that's going to happen at this stage for them. So I do think the Chiefs win this one and run away with it a little bit.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Well, that's all we got for you today on the breakdown. Keep your eyes peeled going forward. We'll be dropping new episodes every single week, looking back, looking ahead, diving into the film, giving you everything you want to know about this Chiefs offense and how it's evolving week to week. Matt, always a pleasure.
See you guys.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.